gentlemen, welcome to episode 45 of season 11 of Movie Reminiscence, the daily podcast, where we curry our way through the 2001 award-winning miniseries Band of Brothers, 5 minutes at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me today to finish off the week with his only appearance this week is John Parker of the Batminute. Welcome back to the show for yet another season, John.
Yes, thank you very much. And what a change again. You pivot between moods and styles and genres, and I love it.
Well, I'm glad you do. I'm glad you do too, because I obviously do. That's why I'm doing it this way. You go from hijacking a train. You jump 26 years in the future, and you're back in World War II. So why not?
We're back again, I suppose, in a way. Yeah, we've gone through time.
This is my third time doing a World War II movie. So there you go.
Wow.
and each of them is different. I mean, there's connective tissue between all three, but they're still very different.
Well, that's the beauty of using World War II as a setting. I think you can tell a lot of different stories within that world.
Exactly. I completely agree. That's the way to do it. I don't know my future plans at this point, but my feeling is I'm gonna try to stay away from World War II for at least another season or two before I do jump back into it. I do have movies on my list that are World War II movies, but I want people to like the diversity. Let's put it that way. So why not? Yeah, the movies aren't going anywhere. So
exactly. They're waiting.
Exactly. That plan to have another World War II movie, season 15 or something like that, is not the biggest deal because, that'll be, a year and a half, 2 years from now, at least. So we have a little bit of time.
It's nice to have it in your back pocket as the old familiar.
That's true also. That's very true. I agree with that. even though, again, they're all very different. So, you can't really compare them all. I mean, The Great Escape, and then Saving Private Ryan, and then Band of Brothers. So Band of Brothers and Saving Private Ryan, there's a little bit of overlap. The Great Escape, there's no overlap whatsoever.
Oh, no, no.
Completely different.
That's actually sort of the way I came to this show was, at the time, it was, it's a TV show by the Private Ryan people. But even then, it's not the same. It's got this connective tissue, but it's not like they just made a TV show, with the same cast and crew and things like that.
Right. No, not at all. I mean, again, anyone who's been listening to all of the interviews that I've been doing with people, from behind the scenes and stuff like that, it snowballed from the fact that Saving Private Ryan was successful, but there are connections between them. I mean, one of the story of Saving Private Ryan is based on a real person who was like best friends with Skip Muck. So you have that connection also, which is I from what I recall, Saving Private Ryan they took the idea of the Nyland brothers and said, okay, let's do this, and then someone said, wait a second, the Nyland brothers are connected to Easy Company, so let's see how we do that, that type of thing.
Yeah, and it's got its own feel, yeah. It doesn't just feel like they stretched out an idea for a movie.
No.
This does feel quite different in a good way.
Right, but you see, part of the problem is that as stretched out as it might feel, it's still, there's so many things that are missing.
Because
even in 10 hours, you're limited in what you can put into this story. So,
yeah. You could probably do 10 hours about the sections we're going to talk about,
Yes. Yes, exactly. I mean, we can talk about other World War II movies today and Monday and Tuesday. there are others that are connected to what's going on here, but we'll get there. We'll get there. So what is your history with Band of Brothers?
Well, that was it, basically, because I was always a big fan of Saving Private Ryan from release, and I was at the time I wasn't like a big viewer of television programs because I don't know, maybe it was still an era where I thought of them as lesser. You know, I hadn't discovered the prestige TV, but I did come to this a few years after release, and instantly was like, this is one of the best things I've ever seen in my life. I made my then partner watch it with me. I actually think she did enjoy it, even though it's not her kind of thing. She was quite taken in by the personal drama, you know, the connections between people and things like that. But yeah, I think I've only actually sat and watched it all the way through in one go. Twice, maybe. Because I'm one of those people as well. I watch something, I move on. I watch something, I move on. But this, I've revisited at least the once, which is high praise, you know, for me.
Yeah, apparently it sounds that way.
Yeah. Because movies, I rewatch on loop, right? But it's TV shows. I don't know. I struggle because it's the ADHD in me. I can't focus for. But this one can keep my focus because it's just so compelling, and you don't even have to be into quote unquote war movies. It's not even about that, really. You know, it's about the people. That's what makes it interesting. It's not the action necessarily that you focus on the most.
Right. No, I agree. I mean, I like you when it comes to watching movies, I can watch them over and over. For me, TV shows, it's much more of a commitment because of the length. You know, going and sitting and watching a 2 or even a 3 hour movie, and then, you know, then you're done. Here, it's a, I mean, this is considered a mini series or limited series, whatever, however you want to refer to it. So therefore, okay, with that, you do have, you know, 10 episodes and that's it. You know, it's not something where they made it and they said, okay, we're going to do 10 episodes and maybe if it works, we'll do another season or something. That wasn't even in the cards here. As far as they're concerned, you know, here we go. We're giving you a story within 10 episodes, which I like from that perspective because I guess the term limited makes sense because it's limited to this. You don't have to say, oh, well, they're going to try and find a way. I mean, a lot of, I guess, limited series nowadays that they continue and stuff like that is because they say, oh, this is making money, so let's see where we can expand the story. You know, and it's not necessarily something that was within the original plan of the story. And they're like, okay, well, here we can move forward and change this and do that and, you know, take the story in a certain direction. But I like the fact that there is, you know, a beginning, a middle, and the end, and that's the way this was set up.
I always prefer that because then it's like a movie. You know,
Right.
they have an
Exactly.
end in sight.
Correct. I mean, there's more than enough material to make another 10 episode miniseries, if not maybe three, you know, because there's so much going on, you know, throughout this entire story. But it's nice to be able to see that. Okay, here we're going to stop it at this point.
Yes. No, absolutely. That when it's structured that way, I am more likely to repeat view your show, you know?
Yes. Yeah,
Because
I
it has
agree.
a proper arc, again, like a film. And I think maybe that's just how my brain works. I prefer that kind of a structure to a story.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with that sentiment because that's the way it is. You know, that's why it's so much more interesting to watch what's going on here because you know that at the end of the quote unquote season, there will be some sort of closure to the whole thing.
Yes, it to me always makes them feel more like more literary and more like a book. You know what I mean?
Correct. I mean, I think one of my all-time favorite TV shows was Babylon 5 because Babylon 5, when J. Michael Straczynski originally conceived of the idea, he wrote it as a 5-season story, and he had
Brilliant.
a beginning, middle, and end, and he knew where he was going with the entire story. He had it all planned out, and he found ways when he was writing it to write out characters if you need to along the way. Like he, I think they're called like backdoor stories or something like that. You know, that if you need, you can get rid of this person and give another person those characteristics or, you know, things like that. And
Fantastic. That's great. That's
that's why
great
I
planning.
think, That's why I think that that's one of the very best TV shows that was ever made, because it was structured that way. I mean, again, because it was early 90s, the special effects aren't that great when you watch them today, but the story itself and the character building is just amazing. And I always like going back and rewatching it from that perspective. I mean, there are episodes that show a previous episode from a different perspective.
Oh, I always love
Like
that. I think that's the
in one of
best.
the seasons, I'm trying to remember which season this is, they come across some character, and this is a character they've never seen before, and they don't know who he is, and whatever. And the character, they don't really know what's going on. And then, like 2 seasons later, they give us that exact story again from the other character's perspective, and then it gives you so much more information as to what's really going on. And damn, now that I'm talking about it, I want to go sit and rewatch it. But that's a hell of a lot of episodes.
Yeah, I want to. I've only seen like bits and pieces, so now you've sold me on a whole rewatch. Although interestingly, like that whole different perspective thing, there's a World War II example, of course. I'm trying to remember the name. It's I think Clint Eastwood made it. There's a movie that's from like the US side, and then there's another movie that's the same thing from the
Oh, yeah,
Japanese
of course,
side.
of course, of course. You're talking about Letters of Iwo Jima and Flags of
That's
Our
it.
Fathers.
Yeah,
Okay, again,
that's the.
it's not 100% that way. I mean, they both deal with the Battle of Iwo Jima, and one of them deals with the battle from the American side, and one of them deals from battle from the Japanese side. But what they didn't, it wasn't like a Rashomon type of thing where it's the same
Oh, no, no.
characters. It's just and in my opinion, I think Letters from Iwo Jima is so much better than Flags of Our Fathers. And
I think so, but I'm
I'm
biased.
generally,
I like Japanese stuff.
well, that's the thing. I'm not a fan of foreign films or foreign language films, put it that way, because I don't know if you can really call it a foreign film if Clint Eastwood, directed it. But yeah, I've always enjoyed watching Letters from Iwo Jima more than Flags of Our Fathers, because Flags of Our Fathers, to me, seemed like they were trying to somewhat recreate either Saving Private Ryan or Band of Brothers and stuff like that, and they just did it really poorly because you don't really get to know the characters
Agree, agree.
well
Yeah,
enough.
I mean, I like it, but yeah, that
And
is
no,
definitely
I like it too. I don't hate the story. I think it's a very good story, but I just think that it's not as effective as some other World War II movies have been.
Yeah, agree, agree.
Clint Eastwood is an amazing filmmaker, and to even conceive of that idea is just great. To be
Yeah,
able to kind of say, okay, I'm going to take a battle and I'm going to do two movies back to back, one's from this perspective and the other's from this perspective. And
and not only that, but selling it to a studio, like getting them on board to go, yeah, okay, you can do two.
well, I have a feeling that Clint Eastwood in 2005, 2006 really didn't have much trouble selling things to the studios. He had just won his second Best Picture and Best Director Oscars, so
Yeah, true, true.
it might have been something a little more simpler than one would think. But yeah, you never know. We all know that there are crazy things that are going on in Hollywood, so there's no way of
Oh,
knowing.
yeah.
I won't even try to say that I completely understand it and believe it. So
Agree.
yeah, that's the way it is. So let's actually talk a little bit about Band of Brothers.
What?
Yes, I know that goes against the contract that you signed with me of what we're going to talk about.
I never agreed to this.
Yes, we have to talk 15 minutes about other things first, and then we can talk about Band of Brothers.
That's podcasting in a nutshell.
Yeah, more or less. More or less. So episode 45 begins with Malarkey saluting Sobel back and ends with lots of singing and dancing in the streets.
I was very excited to get even a brief glimpse of David Schwimmer.
There you go.
Because that was another way this show was kind of sold to me at the time. It's like, oh, it's not only by the people of, who made Saving Private Ryan. David
He's
Schwimmer's in it. I
got
was like,
Ross.
oh, wow.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It's funny to think of that now. That was a huge draw.
Yes. Yes, it really was, because at the time, he was probably the most well-known actor that's in this miniseries.
And you're
Since then,
finally seeing him do like serious.
right, and it's very much different than what he's done up until now, because he basically plays and
Yeah.
we've never seen him do that before. So
No.
it shows how good of an actor he can be.
Yeah, it's a shame. I think he should have gone on to bigger success. Like, look at this, and then compare it to everything before. Like, how did more people not go, I want him, in my movie or my show?
That's right. And look about what's happened over the last 25 years. I mean, he has not broken out. He does have
No.
parts here and there, but I he's not. Let's put it this way. There are a lot of people who get very little screen time in this movie, and we just see their face for just a few minutes, who have had better had more powerful careers than David
Yeah.
Schwimmer did.
Which, again, I'm sure he has a lot of money. I'm sure he's working as well. But yeah, why wasn't he a star?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, he was in Friends, but outside of that.
Right. We will never know.
Yeah,
The crazy way that things work in Hollywood.
and
It's absolutely.
I feel like he was sort of betting on this as this will be the thing that takes me forward, and it should have, because he's great in it. He's great in it. Even just having this one like brief moment of him, I was like happy.
Yes. Yeah. So, in continuing with what happened yesterday, so we see Malarkey encounters Sobel, and we know that Sobel has been promoted and sent to being in charge of a jump school. Malarkey salutes Sobel, and Malarkey goes, "Sir," and then Sobel just looks at him and then turns around and sees a motorcycle and a truck behind him and goes, "You thought you can get away with this?" He goes, "What do you mean, sir? Sergeant, that motorcycle is United States Army property. That may not mean anything to you, but it means something to me. Where'd you find it?" And Malarkey doesn't really have much of an answer. And Bull is looking at this and he goes, "That's him, all right."
Well, maybe because I haven't, rewatched the entire season for this show. What's the issue with the bike exactly? Is it because the army is a separate group, like division, and
No,
they're now the jump school?
they found it somewhere and they're taking it with them. That's
What's
what
wrong with
it
that?
is. Find
Maybe I'm not
your
military
keeper.
enough.
So,
Yeah, because to me, I was like, oh, well, it's all the same. Why don't you just use it? It's fine. I thought he was being a bit harsh, but then again, I'm not a military person, and I know they're sticklers for the rules. That's the whole point,
yeah, so it is possible.
you know.
Could be that
And
that's part of the
it's
problem.
interesting because you instantly learn about well, you know me, listeners. If you've heard me and names, I'm just going to call him David Schwimmer. You instantly learn about his character in this one moment. Just from that brief interaction, you get what he's about. You don't need to know anything. You've got 100% of what he is right there. He's like, no, he is a man of the rules. You do things the proper way, or else.
Exactly. So again, there is the whole idea of stealing this motorcycle. I mean, basically, both Malarkey and Moore stole this motorcycle.
Well, yeah. Well, what's wrong with that? There's a lot of crazy stuff going on.
Yeah.
But I also get it. Like in my day-to-day life, I would be very much be someone who's like, no, don't follow the rules. Do your own thing. But it's a bit. This is it. It's the military, and it's the biggest conflict, ever. Okay, in this particular case, maybe follow the rules for a bit.
Yeah. Again, no one else seems to mind. That's the irony of
Yeah, because again, does it matter in the grand scheme?
it. I guess not. What's one little motorcycle?
Exactly.
But unfortunately, Sobel seems to be bothered by it. And then one of the replacements, Hashi, says to Bull, "Who is he, Sarge?" He goes, "He was our first CO." He goes, "What happened?" He goes, "He got promoted."
Never get promoted.
We see, the chop changes, and we see Lieutenant Brewer talking with Sergeant Martin, and he goes, "Just chap my leg, Sergeant." He goes, "Lieutenant, you'll be in the doorway." "Yeah, I know, but look, Sergeant, you'll be the man behind me. When the green light comes on, if you can just tap me, all right?" He goes, "The green light will be next to you, sir. Just do it. That's an order." So again, they're showing us, you have this this relatively new lieutenant who's never jumped before, and he's very concerned about the fact that he's about to jump out of a perfectly good airplane, and on this raid, and he just wants assurance that
Yeah, I'm on his side, right? He's obviously very anxious, you know? It's not this other guy's taking it very literally, like, oh, but you'll see the thing. It's like that's not what he's worried about, man. Like, just tap his leg. Just tap his damn leg. It's clearly gonna help his anxiety and just get him to go. That's all
Well,
he
I
wants.
think he's
That's all
just
he wants.
concerned that he's going to be scared in the moment, and that's it, you
Yeah,
know.
exactly. And that tap will be all he needs to kind of just do it. You know,
Right.
but I also I think parachuting looks like one of the most awful things in the world. I think it looks horrible. So I feel his pain. Oh my God, I don't know how anyone does it. I've never, people do it for fun. It blows my mind.
Yeah, I don't get it either.
We're all different at the end of the day. If you enjoy it out there, listeners, if you enjoy it, fantastic. But I can't understand.
Right.
It looks like the most terrifying thing ever. And then they're doing this and they're going to go into one of the other most terrifying things ever. So, you know, it's a, oh,
Okay, but again,
geez, yeah.
these are people who trained to do this, so it's a little different. It's not like you or I where we're just gonna go up in a plane and say, "All right, here's a parachute and jump out, and let's hope everything goes well." By them, it's okay. I've trained to do this. I know what I'm supposed to do, and let's hope that everything goes well. The ending is the
Well, that's the difference is, if we did it, okay, we'd be scared in the moment, but we know once we land, if we land, that's okay, it's over. But for them, once they land, it starts.
Correct.
So there's no like finale to it. There's no like, you don't have the adrenaline rush and then it's finished. So I think that's part of the problem as well, isn't it? It's like, oh God, everything's just going to escalate from here.
And again, most of these men have already jumped. It's just the new ones that haven't reached that point yet, and that's part of the issue here.
I don't envy them.
And then the shot changes, and we see Bull walking through the men, and he comes over to Garcia, and he goes, "Come here, come here." He goes, "Sling it up and down, and when you hit the ground, your knee'll hit the butt. The business end will break your jaw." And he goes, "Lose your reserve. You won't need it. We're jumping low." So again, Bull has jumped once, but he's already knows they already know what's good to do and what's not good to do. And I like how he's just giving quick advice, with what you need to do. It reminds me a little bit from the beginning of Platoon, where you have Willem Dafoe basically telling Charlie Sheen. And he basically says to him, he says, "All right, why are you carrying all this stuff? I'll carry it for you now, but next time talk to me, and this is what you need to take with you. These are the essentials." So I like the way that in this case at least, this is someone who the last time he jumped, Bull jumped 3 months, right now we're in the middle of September, so he jumped 3 months earlier, and he's already an expert on what you need to do and what you need to, don't need to do. And as we saw in the episodes dealing with the jumping on D-Day, they learned a lot of what not to do next time.
That's it,
There were
isn't it?
enough screw-ups along the way.
Like I'm sure in the training they get told like to do and take far more than they need, but once you've done it one or two times, other people will be like, no, hang on, we've stripped this back to the bare essentials. We understand what you need to do. We get it now.
Well, again, I think it goes just with the fact that okay, you have certain things that this is the standard of what you should do, but in so there, I guess it's the difference between theory and practice. I guess you can look at it
Yes,
from that perspective.
because what you should do is very different.
Exactly. But I guess it's good from that perspective that, I mean, and I like the way they're showing to us that here's someone who has a little bit of experience, but he knows. I mean, we talked about this back during the D-Day jumps that. A lot of the men didn't even have their guns on them. They had their guns in like a in their leg bag and stuff like that. And the idea is that you're going to land on the ground and you want to have your gun ready to do something. So I don't know why, so I'm glad that he's telling him, make sure you have your gun slung properly. so that you don't break your jaw. That type
Yeah.
of thing.
Oh God, that's another thing. Yeah. Oh no. How the amount of things they have to think about. It's
Yes.
crazy. It's crazy.
And then they give us an amazing CGI shot here of, first of all, the sky. So then we're told that it's September 17th, 1944, Holland. Anyone who knows about World War II history, or perhaps has seen the little movie called A Bridge Too Far, we're now dealing with Operation Market Garden. And this is when it happened, and the 101st was part of it.
Yeah, and this
And
shot, as you mentioned, like I think it's like weirdly beautiful. It kind of
it is.
looks like an art piece or something.
Yes. I mean, again, you can tell it's completely CGI or special effects, however they do however they did that stuff back in 2001. But as you said, it's beautiful. Just watching the number of parachutes and airplanes and the men coming out of them, and we slowly start seeing the men landing on the ground. And jumping into action right away. And
You've
I
got to,
loved
I
the way they
guess,
did
yeah.
it. Because during D-Day, they jumped at night. Here they're jumping during the day, so we can actually see what it is that they're all doing.
Yeah. And it's presented like when they're falling, I don't know, they almost look like I don't know, flowers and petals and things. It's kind of weirdly beautiful for something that's very utilitarian.
And then we also see a whole bunch of them, a whole bunch of the shots of the parachutes even just opening. It shows the amount of detail they did here. Where you see, the before the parachute opens into what's called a parabola. So beforehand, it's I guess you can think of it like an umbrella. So you have, the umbrella straight, and then when you open it, so it turns into, the parabola, whatever it's called.
I didn't even know it had a name, so that's interesting. Okay.
I think that's the name. Yeah, that's I think that's the name of the shape. I think it's called a parabola. Now I can't even think of what you actually how you pronounce it.
Hey, you're one step ahead of me. I didn't even know it had a name.
Basically, what I see here is that you could call it a dome or a curved canopy or something like that.
Okay.
But
Okay. Dome
for some
makes
reason,
sense as well.
I don't know why I thought it was called a parabola.
Well,
Something like that.
maybe that's the scientific sort of term you're thinking of, you know. Because
Okay,
dome doesn't sound
a
very proper,
parabola
does it?
is a U-shaped curve
There you
defined as
go.
the set of all points equidistant from a fixed point. So, okay, maybe.
No, I think that sounds right. Yeah, there's no way the actual proper name is it's a dome. I think you've hit the nail on the head. You've got
Okay. I thank you for that
it.
pat on the back on that one.
Yeah, I'm giving you
I hope I'm
permission
right.
to be correct.
Thank you. Thank you. I do appreciate that, John. Yeah. And we see the guys landing on the ground, and we see different people doing different things. Like one of the guys pulls out his knife and then cuts a piece out of his parachute and stuffs it in his pouch, which is like really cool because it's like the idea that, okay, this guy thankfully believes he's going to survive and he's taking a souvenir.
Yeah, because I assume, I mean, maybe I'm wrong. I assume you just ditch all the gear. Like, you're not going to use that again, right? So, yeah, they're a souvenir. Why not?
Exactly. And but it's nice the way that we see that they do that.
It's
And
those things that make it go. It's the little touches, the character moments. Whereas a lot of movies, because they haven't got time, they'll focus on the action. Which is great in its own way, but that's not what this is. It's about feeling, because you would do that in that moment. It's about feeling connected to these people.
right. Exactly. And we see the guys taking off their chutes and getting ready. We see Bull quickly get out of his after he hits the ground, and he runs over to where Hashi is, and Hashi seems to be having a little bit of trouble getting his open. And Bull just comes next to him, slings his gun, and goes and Hashi says, "I'm sorry, Sarge." He goes, "Don't be sorry." And he quickly unstraps his parachute and goes, "Grab your rifle, let's go." So again, it's let's just move forward. Don't worry about it. Not a big deal. You don't really need
Yeah,
that.
there's other stuff to worry about now. You know,
Right.
move on.
Exactly. And we see Garcia run after them also. And Garcia seems to be limping a little bit at the beginning of his run. Maybe he landed a little funny and then
I
but then
noticed that. I thought that was a great little detail because, again, maybe I'm wrong. I assume it's very easy to hurt yourself when you land, you know.
Yes. I'm trying to remember the line in the Bridge on the River Kwai. They talk about parachuting, whether because William Holden's character has never parachuted before, and they say, well, you have like a one chance in three of injuring yourself, so
Oh.
we might as well just let him jump the first time and not have to practice or something to that effect. I'm trying to
Oh.
remember the exact quote, but yeah, the,
That's
and that's around
horrible.
the same time.
And like as someone who sprained their ankle like a month ago, it's still not okay. So if this guy's done that,
It wasn't parachuting, was it?
no. I was going to say sadly not, but no, thank God it wasn't. But like it's still like pretty much as bad as it was the day I did it. So if he's done the same thing and he's now expected to go into battle. Oh no. Oh. I guess in this particular scenario you just have to ignore it. Okay, fine. You've got again other things to worry about. It's the least of your problems, I suppose, if you've sprained your ankle. Whereas for me, oh, that's a big problem. I'm living in a different world.
As you said, it's an interesting way to show it to us.
I always
We're
appreciate that
maybe
when it's.
mincing a little bit, and because I doubt that the actors really jump,
Oh, no. Yeah, so it's a conscious choice. And I always like that rather than. It's like show, don't tell. You don't need a whole like dialogue scene of him going, oh, I've really hurt my foot, blah, blah, blah. No, we don't need that. Just this 1 millisecond. Fantastic.
And then he just fixes his stride and continues, so it makes a lot of sense, so it's an interesting. I wonder if that was something that that the actor who plays Garcia decided to add in there, or wait, was it Garcia or Ramirez? Maybe it's Ramirez. I don't know why I
I
keep
mean,
calling him Garcia. I think it's
don't worry. You're talking to someone who can't remember names of people they know, so don't
No,
worry.
I'm pretty sure it's Garcia. So Garcia is played by Douglas Spain. I'm pretty sure that's who it is. But it makes
Yeah.
me wonder if who made the decision.
I hope it was the actor, because I always like it when actors bring a little something to the part. You know, they don't just do what they're told. They add a little spice.
Yeah, that's very true.
That's how you get some of the best moments in film and television. It's like an actor goes, "Let me try something," and 9 times out of 10, I think it works. It's like, yeah, leave it in. I want to feel their personality a little bit. They're not just reading lines off a page or something.
Right, that's true also. I mean, again, this type of situation, it makes sense. You need to add a little bit of interpretation, but there's more to it. The fact that whether the director noticed it or didn't notice it, and whether the editor noticed it or didn't notice it, and said, hey, let's just, the actor did this. All right, why not?
Yeah, absolutely.
So it makes sense. So in Bridge of the Require, once they convince Sears that he needs to join, so they say, you've had parachute training? And he goes, no, sir. He goes, blast, this is awkward. Still, it never occurred to me. Well, maybe he's right. Arrange some practice jumps for him. I'll pop over and check right away. All right, Chapman, you can run along. Yes, sir. He goes, in view of time, they don't think practice jumps will be worthwhile. No, you make one jump, you only got 50% chance of injury. Two jumps, 80%. Three jumps, you're bound to get your packet. The consensus is the most sensible thing for Major Shears to do is just go ahead and jump and hope for the best. Then Shears says, with or without a parachute. So you see, I was right about the fact that they basically say that by your third jump, there's more of a chance you're going to get injured. But to say you have a 50-50 chance the first time and an 80% chance the second time, that's astounding.
That's crazy, isn't it? Wow. That people would like, obviously you can see why the military would require people to, you know, parachute into combat, but that people would actively choose to join that,
Well, that's because
knowing
of the
this
amount of money
information.
they were getting paid. They got an extra
Wow.
$50 a month, which was like another $1,000 a month compared to what we
Wow.
do today or something like that. It's just,
Oh,
it,
that's crazy.
yeah.
Hey, you know what? It fair enough, because if you're willing to do this, you've earned that tenfold.
Exactly. Get to see some of the countryside of Holland as the men are all crouched in what looks like a ditch, and then Hubler starts running through the row of men, and he's carrying some beers, and people are looking at him, and someone goes, "Where'd you get that from, Hubler?" And then Hubler goes, "I think I love Holland," and he starts passing out the beers, and they go, "Where'd you get these?" He goes, "That farmhouse over there, just sitting out in the open. I don't know. Maybe they were expecting us."
I love that. I love that little touch as well, because you know it makes you connect with them again. Like, that's exactly, if I've just been through all this and I'm about to do what they're about to do, it's like I'm having a beer. You know?
Especially if it's a free beer sitting on somebody's porch.
Yeah, it's, I think, again, in a normal situation, I would be like, don't take someone's beer, but we have to understand what's going on in the world and, you know, and their lives at this point. Take the beer, who cares?
Exactly. At this point, they look up and they see a whole bunch of planes fly over, and Webster goes, and he goes, "Made it." And they go, "I wonder if they hit anything." And as the planes fly away, Webster goes, "Goodbye, air support."
Oh, yeah, that's the last they're going to see of that for a while.
Yeah, and they're getting ready for the rest of their mission at this point. And then Lieutenant Bruce shows up and goes, "There's some kind of hold up ahead. We're going in through this field here."
I know there's not a lot of options, but I would be so scared just walking through an open field. Even if you have information that, oh yeah, there's not really, you know, there's nobody around in this area, just being out in the open like that, oh, that's horrifying, you know,
Fair
because
enough.
you must be assuming that there's an enemy somewhere at all times, right?
Correct. Correct. And then we hear one of the other officers scream, "Move out, Able Company. Let's go. Let's go. Move it. Move it." And then we get a shot of these men basically walking through this field, and they're probably a little too close together than they should be. You still want them to be, with much more distance between them as they're walking through.
Do you think that's just for the cinematography, though? Like, bunch them
Yeah,
together a little bit, get them in
completely,
the frame.
completely for the cinematography. I believe that the real men in this type of situation know better than to do this.
Yeah, because that's the thing. They're quite well trained at this point. So yeah, I think it's just to fit them in the frame.
Yes, exactly. We see that Hashi takes out his bayonet and puts it on his gun, and Bull walks by and he goes, "You won't be able to shoot that straight with that thing on."
I like hearing about that because I'd never considered it, but it makes perfect sense. If you're adding something,
You're adding weight.
you're
That's what it
adding
comes down
weight. Yeah, like so it made perfect sense to me, but I'd also never thought about it, you know. So it was a nice little touch. And plus, they're out in this open field, you know. They're probably not expecting any close quarters combat in the immediate you know, time frame. So there's no point adding that now, man. Like, wait.
Right. But again, the nice part about it is, once again, we're getting a shot of Bull explaining to the men what's important for them to be doing here.
Yeah.
To help, he's using his experience over the past 3 months to help them, I guess, for lack of a better word, survive.
Yeah, because maybe in the training or, like, you know, the manuals or whatever, maybe it says you land, you fix your bayonet, you know, that's the proper way, maybe, but also not the practical way.
Correct. Correct. And then we see them walk through. I mean, they were in a field that had like very high, tall, I guess, grass, weeds, something, and now they're going through like an area that just looks like a lot of mud. And I like the formation because you can see that they're actually walking in a triangle formation. Like, you have one guy at the head of the triangle that's leading everyone, and then You have guys to both sides and then to both sides, and
Mm-hmm.
it again, cinematography, from a camera angle, it looks great,
It looks,
and it makes
yeah, it
sense to
looks
do
really.
it that way.
I noticed that as well. I picked up on it, like, oh, I wonder if is that a real way of moving that
Yes.
they do in a triangle? Because I could see
That
the
makes sense.
logistical, yeah.
It makes sense. And then Lieutenant Brewster stopped Miller from moving. And I'm assuming you're familiar with who Miller is, aren't you?
Oh, yes, obviously.
James McAvoy.
It blew my mind when I was rewatching this episode. There's so many people that I have now seen in like huge things. I was like, what? Ones I'd forgotten about. I forgot he was even in this.
He
He
might have
looks so
forgotten even
young.
in this.
Yeah, he probably has. He looks like a child, you
Yes.
know, and I don't mean that in an insulting way.
Well, I wonder how old McAvoy was when they made this. McAvoy was born in 79. He's still 21, 22.
Oh,
So he's
yeah.
not as young as you might think.
He's got a youthful face,
Yes,
hasn't he?
definitely. Definitely. And then we get a shot inside of this Dutch town. And we see the men get up to a fence and they start pointing their guns at a house that's across the way, and we see a woman putting out her orange laundry.
My first thought, again, I have it, when I was rewatching it, it'd been a long time. My first thought was, you see someone at the window doing something seemingly innocent. I was like, no, don't trust her. Don't trust her. She's up to something. She's an enemy. Of course she isn't, but it'd be your first thought, right?
That's right. And the two men at the fence are getting ready to shoot, and Bull runs up to them and goes, "All right, hold your fire." And they give us a nice long lingering shot of this woman, tying the, I don't know, it might not even be laundry. It might just be that she's tying a flag.
Yeah, I was trying to work that out myself. Like, is it meant to be a sign to someone? Like a secret message? Or is she just putting laundry out?
Yeah, I don't know. And then the shot changes, and we get to see people singing and dancing in the streets, which is an interesting place for the shot to go. First you have these two guys with their guns pointed at a house, and then next shot you just have people singing and dancing in the street.
Yeah, no, that to me, maybe the what she's hanging up is, well, obviously it's orange, so it's maybe it's just this is the symbol of the free Dutch people. Maybe it's a sign like we are like the Germans are gone, to welcome anyone who's coming. Because then you immediately do cut to them in the streets, and there's loads of little orange flags,
Right.
So maybe that's what they're going for. It's quite heartwarming to see the celebrations. It's quite sweet.
We'll talk more about that on Monday, but
Yeah.
because it's not all heartwarming and sweet. Yeah.
No, there's a twist.
A slight twist in what goes on here.
Yes.
So, did you have anything else you wanted to say about this particular 5-minute segment?
The only other thing is, I didn't bring it up, the actor earlier on, you get Dexter Fletcher. And it's astonishing to me that he's in it, because over here he's so incredibly English, and I know him from when I was a kid. He was a child actor, and he was on a kids show called Press Gang, where it's like a kids newspaper, and he was working on that. So I knew him from that, and then he was the host of a video game show when the original host left. So seeing him do things like this, and like now he is a serious actor, but
Isn't he a director now or something?
oh, and he's a director as well, yeah. And I think this was the first time I saw him do something serious. It blew my mind. I was like, what? Hang on, that guy from the video game show. What? That guy from Press Gang. But he's great. And
Directed Rocket Man, he directed Eddie the Eagle. He has eight directing credits.
Wow. And maybe I'm, because I'm not American, maybe I'm wrong, but I think his accents always sound good when he's being an American to me. Good actor.
Oh, and he directed also two episodes of The Offer, the behind the
Oh,
scenes miniseries about making The Godfather. Wow.
interesting. Yeah, wow. Oh, that's another one. Yeah, he was technically in a sort of gangstery thing. He was in, I think he was in Bugsy Malone.
Mean the one with the kids?
The one with the kids. I'm sure he's in that. I'm sure he's in that off the top of my head.
Well,
Because
he has
that was a, that's like.
113 acting credits, so.
Because that movie's like a rite of passage to English people for some bizarre reason. They should be in school.
Yeah, he played Babyface in Bugs and
There you
Bunny.
go. There you go.
He was
Which
Tenet,
you
dummy.
could argue that is a. You could argue that is a serious role because despite it being kids and like. What are the guns? Do they shoot like cream or custard or something? Despite all that, it's actually like done completely straight face. That's why it works, because it just it, they do it as if it is like The Godfather.
Okay, fair enough. All right, so today's segment is band brand, where my guests will give their top five movie bands.
Well, I have a couple from TV shows. Is that okay?
Do I have a choice?
Yes. Okay. Good. I'm just making sure. Make sure. So I mean, I've ranked them, but they a lot of these are interchangeable, to be honest. But I'll go number five. To me, this is actually a recent one because I don't like the show. I have the band. They're called Crisis of Conformity from Saturday Night Live. It's How do you even describe this? It's one sketch from the show. I don't think they ever revisited it, as far as I know, because I don't like the show. But it's a punk band at a wedding, and the lead singer's daughter's getting married, and he's got all the gang back together, and they're gonna play at a wedding as like a present to her, a treat, and they just unleash their full punk fury on the wedding and smash the place up. It's great. It's the greatest sketch on that show that yeah, again, I don't like, but this is perfect. And as an aging punk myself, I relate. And number four, still within the punk realm actually, it is Lady Parts. They are a band from the show. We are Lady Parts. Which it's like a Muslim punk band. It's quite interesting. It's got a lot of good messages and good songs. Very, very good. But in typical me style, I then try and mix up the tone a little bit. So we're now pivoting into a completely different vibe, with number three being Wild Stallions from Bill and Ted. How could I not pick them? How could I not? Even the newer movie was quite good. It wasn't perfect, but it was quite good, you know? And number two, I have a very, very English choice. I have basically the English version of Spinal Tap. I have Bad News, which is that's fantastic. It's basically like Spinal Tap, but they didn't copy them. It just so happened they kind of were doing a similar thing. And it's Rick Mayall. And Adrian Edmondson and stuff from The Young Ones and all those kind of things.
And the name of the movie is Bad News.
It's bad news. It's bad news. It was a TV movie, but it's that's not to discredit it. You know, they performed at festivals and stuff, pretending they were a real band, and they're terrible. It's great. So their number one actually is, I'm gonna have to pick it. I'm sure lots of people do. It's Spinal Tap. It's Spinal Tap. It's perfection. It's one of the greatest movies ever. I adore every second of it. And they're a good
Have you seen
band.
the sequel yet?
I literally just watched it a few days ago. I didn't love it. I wanted to, because obviously the tragic news about the director. So I wanted to love it. I didn't love it that much. It wasn't that funny. But how can you ever top the first one? That's the problem, isn't it?
That's
It just
usually the problem with
everything.
most franchises.
Yeah. Like the first one, every single aspect of it is perfect. Like, and you can listen to the song separately, you know, because they're so well observed. Like, especially like Stonehenge. Like all the like proggy bands at the time were doing songs that legitimately just sound like that. And that's why it's so good.
Oh, wow. Okay. That is a great list. So now we will play the daily game of Name That World War II Movie. So I'm going to spin the wheel and then give you some clues for you to try and guess what World War II movie is. Maybe it's something we talked about today. You never know. It could be. Anything's possible. Now you just missed the bridge too far.
Oh.
Okay. This is a movie from 1957. Okay, any guess yet?
There's probably about 8 million World War II movies in that year.
Okay, and it's about a group of British prisoners who must help build a railroad while they're in a Japanese prison camp, and one of the escapees has to go back and try to sabotage.
I'm assuming I know this. Is it Bridge on the River Kwai?
Yes, it is.
Yes. Believe it or not, I've only seen that the once. As someone who is a movie fan, and a World War II buff, let's say, I've only seen it the once. It was fantastic. That's why it jumped to my mind immediately, because I was like, yeah, it's got to be that. It's got to be that.
Okay, well, and again, it's something we discussed earlier, and so
Yeah. And
shows the
it
randomness
holds
of the film.
up, I think. Like, even to people who aren't really into those things I've just mentioned, like World War II, oh, I find that boring, whatever. I think this works much like this show, actually. It works because it's about the people and things like that, the connections and the humanity.
Maybe in a few seasons from now, get ready to talk about that movie again.
Oh, yeah, that's a good excuse to revisit it. That's why I love coming on this show. You give me an excuse to go back to things that I haven't seen in a while.
There you go. There you go. I mean, Bridge on the River Kwai was actually one of my two options for the first one I was going to do. I was debating between The Great Escape and Kwai, and I decided to go with The Great Escape,
Well,
which is a
also a
little
good
bit
choice.
lighter.
Yeah, I could see that. It's more, maybe more fun to chat about to start off.
I'm let's put it this way: when I eventually do Kwai, it will be fun to talk about too.
You'll
Yeah,
find a way. That's the thing. You'll find a way to make it fun.
I always find a way. Yeah, I don't think you need to worry about that. All right. So, would you like to tell everyone where they can find John Parker?
I'll spread my plugs out. I'll just do one a day maybe. If you want to hear more of me, check out my sort of main podcast, I suppose, Bat Minute, where we go through the Batman movies 1 minute at a time. And by the time you hear this, we might have started our new season. But regardless, if you haven't heard us before, we've got six or seven seasons and then like loads of bonus stuff. So there's millions of episodes to check out. You'll never be lost for something, I'm sure. So just find Bat Minute anyway. It's on all the podcast apps and whatnot.
Everyone have a great weekend, and John's going to stick around, and we'll be back on Monday to continue talking about the next 5 minutes of this movie. Finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie on Minute. You can find me on Facebook, find me on Twitter, find me on Instagram, you can find me on my website, movieonminute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to movieonminute@movieonminute.net. Until Monday, curry!
Curry! Woo!